nationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author Steve Klein sits down with the most fascinating difference makers in Dallas-Fort Worth. Hear from top CEOs, local entrepreneurs, and key playmakers in business right now with your host, Steve Klein.
Aristotle said, "We are what we repeatedly do." Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit. Hi, I'm Steve Klein, and welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. In the studio today are two guests who have made excellence a habit. Our first playmaker reinforces the brand of her clients through their office space, while our second playmaker has grown his business by 100%. With us today is the CEO of a design firm that affects her clients' productivity and their sense of well-being, while our next playmaker is also a CEO that runs a business that was started by his grandmother and a pickup truck. These great playmakers are Joe Hines. Joe is CEO of Stoffelbach, and Dustin Marshall, CEO of Hazel's Hotshot. And we're going to begin today's show with Dustin. Dustin Marshall joined Hazel's Hotshot in the summer of 2011 as CEO. But since 1977, Hazel's has been recognized as an established leader in the expedited freight industry. Hazel's provides point-to-point courier and delivery services, scheduled same-day deliveries, expedited hotshot deliveries, and over-the-road long-distance transport services. Hazel's Hotshot also offers air freight forwarding services and air charters when ground transport isn't fast enough for time-critical deliveries. Prior to joining Hazel's, Dustin was a manager in the Chicago office of Bain & Company and a leading global consultancy. At Bain, Dustin led consulting teams in their work with Fortune 500 companies on topics ranging from supply chain optimization to sales and marketing effectiveness to merger integration to portfolio management. Dustin, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thanks very much. Happy to be here.
Well, with a name like Hazel's Hotshot, there's a story behind that, which I know, but let's talk about the name and how the business got started.
Sure, absolutely. As you mentioned, my grandmother founded the business back in the mid-70s, and her name was Hazel, so hence the Hazel part. And Hotshot is actually sort of a slang industry term for the expedited freight industry, so hence Hazel's Hotshot.
Now, was that the original name from the very beginning?
It was. She started it in sort of 1976, 77 timeframe and went with that name from the outset. And, you know, for folks that are industries that use Hotshot providers, that term has a special meaning. It refers to kind of selling the speed of transportation or expedited freight.
Well, part of that story was she was a single mother.
That's right. Yeah.
Did she purchase the pickup truck to use for it and drive it herself, or did she hire other people?
She did. Yeah. She had been married to my grandfather for quite some time and hadn't worked for most of her adult life. And then, unfortunately, that marriage ended and left her without much work experience and without much money. And, you know, sort of by necessity, she took what funds she had and scraped together some money from friends and bought a used 1-ton Silverado pickup truck and started her own business. She literally got the phone book out and started thumbing through the yellow pages and the white pages and calling businesses and saying, you know, I'll do this delivery for you if you give me a call. And then she'd sit by the phone and wait for it to ring. And when the phone rang, she jumped in the truck and did the delivery herself and came back and waited for the phone to ring again.
That's amazing. No cell phones back then, so she had to be near the
landline. That's right. She carried a bag of quarters with her.
Now she had 10 children that she had support.
Well, she was one of 10 children when
she was one of 10
children.
Yeah,
that's right. She grew up in southeastern Oklahoma.
Yeah, I was going to ask that, where she was in Oklahoma.
Yeah, small town called Blue Ribbon is where she was born, sort of near Ardmore, if you're familiar with Ardmore. And she was one of 10 children born to parents that were sharecroppers. So they were, you know, quite poor. And unfortunately, 6, I believe, of the 10 children died as a child of malnutrition or starvation. They were literally, that poor. And so on her 18th birthday, she scraped together what money she had, and she boarded a bus for Houston and sort of never looked back and, you know, just got off the bus in Houston and went to the YWCA and got a room and started looking for a job.
Well,
so she was a special lady.
When you realize you have a choice of either failing or succeeding, you do what it takes to do.
That's right.
Well, tell us about the business. You were mentioning about Hotshot being a slang. The name of your firm is Hazel's Hotshot. And by the way, if you'd like to go to the website, there's some interesting information there. It's hazelshotshot.com. Tell us a little bit about what you do, because there's basically seven different things that you do within the company.
Sure. Yeah, we we provide a wide array of different freight services. I mean, I would say the crux of our business is this sort of direct expedited shipment, which is typically between cities, and it's typically selling speed, essentially. So our customers call us at the last second. There's no pre-scheduling. It's you know, come pick this up
in the next 30 minutes. I got to get this there yesterday.
Right. Come pick this up in the next 30 minutes, and, you know, it's already late, so hurry up.
Now, are you regional or nationwide?
We operate in all 48 continental U.S. states, but the majority of our business is in Texas or a state that borders Texas. With that, you know, within that sort of area, we use our own assets, our own trucks. We have about 120 trucks that stay in Texas and the surrounding states. Beyond that geography, we tend to partner with other companies like us in other regions. So we've got a loose sort of affiliate partnership with, you know, a dozen other companies like us in other parts of the U.S. And so if you called me to do a delivery from, you know, New York to Maine, we would sort of partner with another provider. But if it's in Texas, we do it on our own equipment.
Well, you grew up knowing about your grandmother's business.
That's
but
right.
You didn't come in as an official CEO until 2011. What caused that to happen?
Well, my grandmother had, until the time of her death in 2014, yeah, that was about a year ago, 2013, she was still heavily involved in the business. And until 2011, she was actually still primarily running the business at the age of 81. She was still getting up at 5 a.m. every morning and going into the office and working a full day. And,
well, she probably loved it.
Yeah, and you know, to some extent, I think it kept her going. Unfortunately, in 2011, her health started failing a little bit, and you know, it was just time for her to take a step back and get some R&R. So, she asked my wife and I to move down here from Chicago and play a more active role in the business. My mother is also involved in the business, and so you know, together the two of us sort of captained the ship, I guess.
Well, what were the skills she saw in you, knowing that you could run the company?
Well, I don't know. We'd probably have to ask her that, but I would hope that she saw, you know, sort of a tenacity and work ethic similar to hers. You know, I spent a lot of time in consulting with Bain & Company, and, you know, in that environment, I was typically working 80 to 100-hour weeks and, you know, traveling 4 days a week, which, you know, presented its own challenges. But, you know, we were solving complex problems and taking risks and, you know, learning about business operations. And so I think I had that sort of skill set to bring to bear on a business that, you know, had grown up, but had some low hanging fruit for, you know, opportunities for improvement. So
now, were you involved in the business in any way prior to 2011?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I grew up around the business. And so, you know, I recall, you know, being a young teenager answering the phones when, you know, on Christmas holidays or over the weekends when we, you know, because the business is actually open 24/7. So it literally hasn't been closed 1 minute in 35 years.
I was going to ask you about that because you have that in the information too. 24/7, 365, not a minute closed.
That's right. Not a minute closed. And so I recall literally, you know, when in my early teenage years, Christmas morning, you know, having to answer the phone because the company business line was transferred to our house so that we could have Christmas dinner. And so,
other thing I thought was interesting is you don't use an answering service.
That's right.
It's a live person that answers the phone all the time. Thank you for that, by the way.
That's right. Yeah, we operate shifts around the clock in both Dallas and Houston just to make sure that the phone is answered by a live person at all times. So,
well, you have on your website is your values and mission statement. And a short mission statement, but you have a number of values, part of them being hard work, determination, integrity, honesty, family, business, safety, service, continual improvement. How does that integrate into what you're doing as a service that moves goods for companies?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good question. We try to take the approach that honesty and integrity and sort of the way that you operate your business is more important than revenue or profits. In fact, recently there's been a movement started by John Mackey, the co-CEO of Whole Foods, called Conscious Capitalism, which you may be familiar with. And we're strong proponents of conscious capitalism. And for those of your listeners that aren't familiar with that movement, it's essentially the idea that business and capitalism has been a huge monumental movement towards change and improvement in society over the years and can and should still continue to do that. But in order to do that, businesses have to take a more holistic viewpoint of who they are operating for. And rather than it just being the shareholders, you have to include, you know, a viewpoint towards customers and vendors and the community and, you know, you know, the environment. It's just a more broad sort of vantage point on how to run a business and what the point of running that business is.
Well, I admire for that. There's a number of companies here in Dallas very involved with conscious capitalism. Tuesday morning.
Absolutely.
Which sandwiches, Studio Movie Grill.
Yes.
All very involved. It's an interesting book. And really what I got out of it is that you need to support all of your stakeholders.
That's right.
Even competitors. Even people that aren't happy with your company. You need to understand and listen to every single stakeholder.
Exactly.
So I admire if you're doing that and putting your values and mission statement on your website. And again, I mentioned that you mentioned that you haven't been closed 1 minute since 1977. Was that a philosophy? Was that a value that your grandmother began from the very beginning?
It was, and you know, I think it's also sort of table stakes in the hotshot business. You know, most of our shipments are sort of last minute emergency deliveries, and you know, emergencies happen at any time of day or night. You know, we work with Luminant and Oncor, the Texas utility companies, and you know, if a reactor is about to shut down at midnight, they don't want to be talking to an answering service. They want somebody that's going to answer the phone and get a truck on the road right then. And so, you know, my grandmother sort of fundamentally believed in offering that service at any time or day or night, and that's part of her legacy. And so we've continued that and will always continue that.
Well, I mentioned at the top that you increased the business 100%. You've done that in 3 years. How have you done that? What did you change when you came into the business 3 years ago?
Well, we were fortunate to bring on a lot of new customers. There's been, you know, quite a growth in, you know, sort of the number of orders and the number of customers that we're dealing with. But I would say the biggest game changer has been an acquisition that we made in 2012. We bought a competitor down in Houston that expanded our footprint down there quite a bit. It was a company called Rosmar Delivery that had been in business since 1965, so actually older than us and very similar to us in sort of history and culture. So we purchased them in December of 2012, and it's, you know, that's been a huge boon for the business, not only because that was a great sort of bolt-on from a geographic standpoint, but it also allowed us to have backhauls back and forth between Dallas and Houston. So, you know, in the trucking business, if you take a load from Dallas to Houston one way and you charge that customer one way and you got to get back to Dallas, if you can charge to get back to Dallas, then, you know, that all flows directly to the bottom line. So it's been a big boon to the business.
You don't want to drive an empty truck.
That's right. You're spending gas and paying the driver. You might as well have some freight you can charge the customer for on the back of it.
Well, the last few moments, where are you taking Hazel's Hotshot? Where are you going from here?
We're very interested in other strategic acquisitions. We're looking in several other cities around Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Louisiana for similar companies like us. Ideally in the, you know, 20 to 30 truck sort of range. You know, hopefully that, you know, have the same sort of culture and service offering. And we'd like to, you know, bring those guys in house. We're also always looking for independent contractor, owner operator drivers spread out around, you know, Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Louisiana that operate their own independent businesses that can be brought under our umbrella from a sales and marketing perspective.
Well, tell a bit everybody how they can get a hold of you.
Well, you can reach our dispatch office again 24/7 at 1-800-822-5443. Or the email address is dispatch@hazelshotshot.com, or as you mentioned earlier, our website is hazelshotshot.com.
Dustin, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity.
Don't go away. We have another guest, and this next guest is in the office architectural business, the design business, and we're going to talk about how Joe Hines has made that successful. Don't go away. Back right after this.
Are you a veteran? Do you need a job? The America's Future Series, in association with Dallas Baptist University, is having a free veteran hiring fair on Tuesday, August 12th at the Dallas campus of DBU. More than 50 Dallas area employers will be there in order to fill open positions with qualified veterans like you. You must register to attend, so go to americasfs.org and register today. That's americasfs.org. See you there.
Operation Kindness is the oldest and largest no-kill animal shelter here in North Texas. Each day, its staff and volunteers care for an average of 300 homeless dogs and cats in its shelter in Carrollton, plus 100 more animals living in foster homes throughout the Metroplex. Learn how you can adopt, donate, or volunteer with this nonprofit group by visiting their website at operationkindness.org or by calling 972-418-7297. operationkindness.org.
Welcome back to Playmakers Talk Show. In this segment, we're going to talk about architecture and design, and talk with Jo Hines. She's a graduate of Kansas State University. Jo founded her own successful interior design firm in Kansas before merging in 1985 with Stoffelbach in Dallas, where she joined as chief operating officer. In 1993, Jo was named president, and rather 2006 was named CEO. Now, Stoffelbach is a certified women-owned business with hub status. Under her leadership, Stoffelbach has designed spaces for Fortune 100 companies, is listed as one of the leading firms in the nation, and has won countless design awards. Jo, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you. Terrific to be here.
Well, you've had an interesting background. We were talking a little bit before the show started, but the question I wanted to begin with was, how does a daughter of florist parents become the CEO of one of the most successful design firms?
Maybe it goes back to the very, very beginning. That business, that floral business, was started by my great-great-great-great-grandmother in 1896.
I'm trying to count generations here. That's a long time back.
1896. So there's a lot of strong women there. The floral business that I started working at when I was the age of 13, taught me creativity, taught me problem solving, and taught me that it takes a lot of hard work to get where you want to be. Yeah. Also, my father told me, you can do whatever you want. And I think that fueled my fire, if you will.
Well, this was not in Kansas. It wasn't in Texas. Where were you?
I was in Nebraska, a small town, 25,000 people, just outside of Omaha, which meant I needed to get out of there. And go somewhere else.
Why University of Kansas? Why that school compared to other schools?
I knew I had a passion in the very beginning for design and architecture, and K-State has a terrific architectural school. I'm still involved with K-State in assisting them in their educational programs. I think K-State is a great school.
Now, you primarily work with offices in design. I listened to a interview you did with the Dallas Business Journal, and three words came out, brand, office, and change. Let's talk about those. Talk about brand, because from what I read about you and what I've found out is brand is a big part of what you do, and you tie in your client's brand with the office design. How do you do that?
Well, we are so lucky. We start a project, and when we start that project, we get inside our clients' heads. We understand what motivates them, what they want to achieve, what may not be working now, what could work better, key performance factors. They open up to us and tell us what they want to achieve, how they want their brand to be perceived, how they want that brand to be demonstrated. And so they tell us all this, and then we can apply creativity and problem solving to begin the design and architectural process to pronounce that brand, to make that brand significant, and to help them with recruiting, retention, to help them achieve their business goals. So we're just very, very fortunate that we get to work with people at so many levels.
Well, it sounds like you spend a lot of time asking questions.
That's right.
And getting them to tell you or give you information they probably hadn't even thought of before.
Well, in addition to wanting to be an architect, I also wanted to be a journalist. So all my electives were taken in journalism, and it helps me write better. It helps me ask better questions. It helps me dig deep to find that information that allows our clients to envision what they really want to achieve.
Well, you do basically office architecture. How did you move just toward that genre, just working with offices?
Corporate spaces, I mean, let's face it, you spend more time in your office. Your office is where you are. It's so significant in the world of achievement that it just made sense to us to focus on the corporate environment and the commercial aspect. We do residential as well, but definitely corporate is our preferred venue.
Your heart and soul seems to be in the corporate environment. Well, three words I asked about was brand. We talked about that. You mentioned office. And a key word that I use with my clients is change. How do you incorporate that into what you do?
We do a lot of change management these days, taking a client from point A to point B. For example, they might be in all total enclosed offices, but they might be in need of much more collaboration, much more synergy. They may not be seeing any activity in their office. So we need to move them to a more open environment. Getting them from point A to point B and having them see the glass as half full rather than half empty, or what's being taken away from me, is critical. So that's when we put on our change management hat. we help them identify the goals that they want to achieve, and then we help them work toward that so they see a cause and effect.
Yeah, I'm thinking about an office I saw the client had, and it's a call center, and three of the walls have windows, so everybody can see out, and they have a very low cubicle, so they can see around. It's a very open, positive working environment, and I'm sure that's what you work on with your clients, because I've walked into offices, and I'm wondering how you can spend time there at all. So what you're doing is you're helping not only create an office space, but also the attitudes of the people that work there, too.
Well, and the office today is focused on health and well-being and energy and just a general overall concern for the occupants so that they feel good when they're in there. And let's face it, if you feel good when you're there, you're going to be there more.
Absolutely. Well, what's the biggest challenge in your business to doing your job and making it successful?
I think there's always the issue of how do you make ends meet and how do you make profitability when you're doing what you love? You still have to be focused on that bottom line. You still have to problem solve for your client, and you have to create that circle of reward so that once a client has trusted you, then they'll trust you again. And that builds that circle of success. So it's always about building relationships, building trust, being mindful of the trust that people place in you, and delivering on it.
Well, one of the things that you had mentioned or was mentioned about you in the Dallas Business Journal was the design industry is all about the details, which is one of the things you focus on. Tell us about what you do as you're focusing on details and helping design an office.
Well, my partner is Swiss, so that gives you a little hint that the Swiss are all about time, details, everything. Without details, a project solution can really have some loose ends. So we've got to ensure that every detail is thought out, every detail is drawn accurately. It takes a lot of good hiring to find the people who are great at details. We're always looking for people who can focus on those little tiny things because it is those details that allow us to produce better solutions.
Well, you had mentioned before about coming from a visual background, you always wanted to be an architect. Was there anything you did as a child to display that other than working with your parents in the floral business?
Well, early on, all the displays in the floral shop, all the various seasonal displays, I was in charge of all of them, and I started at 13. So they knew that there was a talent there, and they wanted to encourage it. And I think then, graduating and going into college and all of that, I found myself getting involved with things like Habitat for Humanity, building things, helping people, because it just is such a natural for me.
Now, when you had your firm in Kansas, was that also office design, or were you doing other types of architecture?
It was also office design. We started in Topeka. Then we thought we would stay small. We didn't. We grew into Kansas City. And then I was fortunate to merge my company with Stoffelbach in 1985. So that was a deal changer.
Well, that's the story right there in terms of how you ended up in Dallas merging with Stoffelbach. Can you enlighten us a little bit on how all that began to happen?
Well, Andre Stoffelbach was a mentor of mine. That mentorship began straight when I graduated from college. He was a keynote speaker, and my boss told me, go pick up the keynote speaker at the airport, which I did, and it was Andre Stoffelbach. We were friends and mentors for a long time, and I consulted with him on where should I take my business? Where's the next step? I have these multiple offers, and he said, merge your company with mine. So that's how it started, and we merged our companies in 1985, and then in 1993, we merged our lives. So it's a mentorship that has really proven to be successful.
Well, it's a unique situation, too, in working together as partners in more than one sense of the word and understanding. And just from the way you described Andre, it seems like your personalities fit each other and you have the weaknesses and the strengths that work together so you can help each other as you're designing firms.
Well, and a lot of people say, how can you be with your husband 24/7? A lot of people say they couldn't do it. We find it to be exhilarating. We're focused on the same thing. We're both passionate about architecture and design and details.
By the way, if you'd like to check on Joe's company, it's Stoffelbach.com, which is Stoffelbach, to get a little better idea. There's some interesting pictures on there about what Joe does. If you had to describe the perfect client and the perfect job, what do you really enjoy doing in an office or for a client?
Well, the perfect client is one who appreciates the power that design has in their office. Design is the most powerful and strategic tool to differentiate offices, people, companies, brands. And so you want a client that's going to be very open to the idea of how they could best present themselves. And so I guess it's a person who's receptive and willing to trust us.
I go to offices all over, all the time, all throughout the country. And occasionally I'll go into an office where they have that wow factor. That is really fantastic. As I was telling you earlier, I'm not a visual person. I can see something and say, yes, I know that looks good. I don't know how you got there. Mm-hmm. And that seems like what you're doing too. You're helping them develop that wow factor based on what they're looking for and what their brand is.
Well, and a client with imagination is so exciting because they will say, here's my vision. Now you take it and do more. And good design does not necessarily need to cost more. Good design is just about making that wow factor, if that's what they want to achieve, having it all come together and having it be a space that is memorable.
What I was thinking of as you're talking about that is the cop and robber shows on TV, the Law and Order shows were in the years ago where they had the sketch artist, and the sketch artist was asking about the perpetrator and drawing while they're talking and turning around to the victim saying, oh my God, that's him. That's where I see you coming from. You're getting all this information, you're developing that, and you show it to your client and say, you have put on paper exactly what my vision is. That would be exciting.
It's so exciting. Yesterday we made a major presentation and a client said, I'm speechless. This is even more beautiful than I ever envisioned it could be. That's what keeps us happy.
I would think it would be. How do listeners or potential clients get a hold of you?
Just call us. I can't say we're 24/7, but www.stoffelbach.com. Call our phone line, 214-747-2511, or email us at Stoffelbach.com.
Joe, thank you very much for being a guest on Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you.
Joe Hines, CEO of Stoffelbach. This has been a terrific show. Thank you for joining us, and thank the guests for being in the studio. It's been a great having you with us. Join us at PlaymakersTalkShow.com, where you can get all of our replays and past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and we're going to be back next week with more Playmakers. See you then.
Who will Steve be interviewing next? Find out on Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein every Friday afternoon at 3 on 770 KAAM. Hear this interview again by going to Steve's website, PlaymakersTalkShow.com.